careless men who jump and die.
America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. It's Monday, March 26th, 2007, and our special guest today at 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, will be Commander Dave Lewis of the USS Liberty. Of course, we had Gary Brummett on the show on Friday talking about the events that surrounded the Israeli attack on the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. He has put me in touch with Commander Dave Lewis, also of the USS Liberty, who is going to come on today. Dave was the research officer for the USS Liberty in 1967, and we'll get at the bottom of all kinds of things, hopefully, this morning in a two-hour segment with Dave Lewis that will start at that time. And I hope to have Gary Brummett back on the show at some juncture, along with other contacts that Gary has suggested, because it seems to me that this USS Liberty case has such special import for all of us as Americans, not simply in terms of what happened 40 years ago and all of the reasons why it happened, which we're still trying to determine all these four decades later, but also to attempt to find out why the United States government continues to obscure the facts surrounding this case and what it means for you and for me in terms of the implications for present American Middle Eastern policy, where it seems that we are headed towards some very, very difficult days in the days ahead. This whole situation that CNN is now reporting on regarding Iran's possession of these British Marines, we, of course, will be watching this story very, very closely. It's interesting that when it first broke, the American print media seemed not to be saying too much about it. I was in Borders the day after the incident took place, and the London Financial Times had it on the front page. Most of the rest of the Western media, particularly in the United States, wasn't saying too much. But now this whole thing seems to be a source of ongoing conversation. The latest coverage on CNN.com today indicates that Tony Blair has indicated that he's attempting to solve this problem with the Iranians diplomatically, but at the same time is saying that the Iranians need to understand how central this issue is and the successful resolution of this issue is with the British government. So this is going to be something to watch again as it unfolds. Is this going to prove to be the incident that brings about the collapse of the House of Cards that we've been speaking out on in the last couple of months on this show? Is this going to be the incident that precipitates the American military action against Iran that we've been fearful of for, again, the last few months especially, that I've been talking about for the last few years? Who knows, but it's something to keep an eye on, and suggests very strongly that tensions in the region are rising and that outside forces may well be at work in terms of the exacerbation of these tendencies. Let's keep an eye on it, and we will keep you informed day by day and week by week as this whole issue continues to unfold, with the end game suspected but as of yet unknown. There were five additional American GIs that lost their lives in Iraq this last weekend. That's also a lead story on CNN today. When I come back, we'll take a look at the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs to discuss some further facts about the Sami al-Aryan case. Mrs. Aryan was a guest on this show some days ago. We'll revisit that issue when we come back. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. Stay tuned.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Learn about the new discoveries of MSP Research. Find out about the success MDs, dentists, veterinarians, and others are having with Silver 500. Learn secrets to survival, how to detox the liver, gallbladder, and kidneys, and how over 1,100 doctors are treating Lyme disease, hepatitis C, diabetes, respiratory infections, and many more with success thanks to the help of MSP Research and Silver 500. Microbiologists have tested our mild silver protein and found Silver 500 to be the most effective treatment for B. subtilis, a subgroup of anthrax. Choose the products in your medical supply wisely. Our doctor's manual has grown to over 600 pages. Give us a call at 1-334-493-0420. That's 1-334-493-0420 and see why doctors in five countries use a dozen products that are manufactured by Dr. Bill McFarland. One more time, that's 1-334-493-0420 or visit our website at www.mildsilverprotein.com/home.html.
Hi, Michelle. I haven't seen you on the bus for a while. Did they change your shift?
No, Lori. I finally quit my job. I'm working at home now, and I love it. No more commuting. And I'm home when the kids get out of school.
Working at home? Doing what?
It's a long story. It all started when I discovered the website earnmoneyathome123.com.
Oh, Michelle, you didn't fall for one of those internet deals, did you?
Well, I looked into several, and this one is for real.
Are you sure?
I didn't quit my job until I was sure, and now I'm making way more money working at home.
Really?
I've joined the success team in their major advertising co-op. Our business is fully automated, which gives me more money and the time to enjoy it. I'll be earning money while we're skiing this winter.
What was that website again?
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Here, write it down.
Good idea. EarnMoneyAtHome123.com. Maybe we can go skiing this winter, too.
EarnMoneyAtHome123.com is a global opportunity.
Mark Danpas, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. At 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, we will have Commander Dave Lewis on the show. Dave was the research officer for the USS Liberty at the time of the June 8, 1967 attack on that vessel by Israel. And this is somewhat of a continuation of Friday's show when we had Gary Brummett on. And Gary, of course, is a USS Liberty survivor and was sharing all kinds of amazing things with us over a two-hour period of time. We're going to be doing more of the same today with Commander Lewis from 8 a.m. Central Standard Time on to the conclusion of the show. And I hope you'll be able to stay with us and when appropriate, to give us a call at 1-800-313-9443. That call-in number is 1-800-313-9443. Before the commercial break, I was making reference to the current edition of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. I picked up my copy yesterday at Borders in San Antonio. This is the April 2007 edition. That's volume 26, number 3. The important thing to remember, of course, is April of 2007. That's the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. There are a number of really good articles in this present edition. But the one that is perhaps most important to RBN listeners is the one entitled The Ordeal of Dr. Sami Al-Aryan. Sami's wife, Dr. Aryan's wife, was on this show, Nayla was on this show some days ago, talking about his present situation. To refresh the memory of those who did not have an opportunity to listen to my show on this subject some days ago, Dr. Sami Al-Aryan was a computer professor at the University of South Florida. He was charged under the initial USA Patriot Act with all kinds of crimes that were terrorism-related. There were 17 counts against him. He was acquitted on 8 of the 17 counts, and on the remaining charges, the jury was hung in terms of a decision. But the important thing to note, I believe, according to what is both in the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, as well as what Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross has indicated in his latest story for the American Free Press on this issue, is that the remaining people on the jury voted 10-2 to acquit Dr. Al-Aryan on the remaining counts as well. Had it not been for those two people out of 12 on that jury, he would have been acquitted on all counts. But the long and the short of it is that he was convicted of absolutely nothing and had been in federal detention prior to that trial, of course, and has been in detention ever since. He continues to be now in a federal detention center in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina, without having been convicted of a single thing. There are a series of articles in this Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, the current one, April of 2007, that talk about the particulars of this case. Dr. Peter Ehrlander, who is an appeals counsel for Dr. Sami Al-Aryan, is a professor of law at the William Mitchell College of Law in St. Paul, Minnesota. He has a very fine piece that covers a couple of pages of the legal issues that are involved in this very, very sad situation. That is well worth your time to take a look at that. Layla Al-Aryan, one of Dr. Al-Aryan's daughters, has a very interesting article of a couple of pages entitled The Ordeal of Dr. Sami Al-Aryan. Suffering and Strength Extends to the Family as Well. That's the title of her piece. And in that article, a particular article, there's also an inset judgment on all of this, provided by John Esposito and John Vole. John Esposito is a professor of religion and international affairs at Georgetown University, and John O. Vole is a professor of Islamic history and associate director of the Prince Alawid bin Talal Center. They have a lot to say about this case that is found on pages 26 and 27 of this segment of the magazine. And then going over to page 28, Andrew Kilgore, Richard Curtis, and Delinda Hanley have an article entitled The Ordeal of Dr. Sami Al-Aryan. Despite his ordeal, Dr. Sami Al-Aryan has confidence in American justice. That continues through pages 28 and 29. And then you get over to page 30, and Melva Underbakke has a piece entitled Assistant U.S. Attorney Gordon Cromberg Displays Anti-Arab, Anti-Muslim Bias. This is an assistant U.S. attorney of Zionist background who is up in Alexandria, Virginia. I understand from what came out in my interview with Nayla Al-Aryan, and this has been confirmed by Mark Glenn in his piece on the subject for the American Free Press, that the government finally made an agreement or an arrangement or a plea bargain settlement with Dr. Al-Aryan where he would plead guilty to one reduced count on something in order to gain his freedom and to take his family back to Palestine. That agreement was later revoked, and he's still in jail. But at any rate, a lot of the controversy surrounding this, as Mark Glenn reports it in the American Free Press, and as Melva Underbakke talks about it here for the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, involves this assistant U.S. attorney by the name of Gordon Cromberg. That bit of discussion begins on page 30 and goes over to page 32. And then Eric Vickers, who is an attorney and civil rights activist and is a member of the board of the American Muslim Alliance, has a piece on pages 32 and 33 that gives his particular spin and all of the implications of this case that surround Dr. Sami Al-Arian, the former computer professor at the University of South Florida, who is now in federal detention in Raleigh-Durham, North Carolina. The long and short of it is, if you can get a copy of this magazine, I would really urge you to do it, because it will cover in depth all of the angles surrounding this circumstance, many of which I talked about with Nayla Al-Arian when she was on this show. But it's always good to sit down with a good print manuscript and to go through it line by line and paragraph by paragraph to underscore and to put in the margins notes that surround all of the facts. And I think that this is as fine a piece as you will see in print currently in regard to this man's situation. And one of the things that's particularly striking to me is that, of course, since his acquittal on these charges, this has largely dropped out of the corporate American media, the Zionist-affiliated American media, for all of the obvious reasons. And as I mentioned on the show the day that I interviewed Nayla Al-Arian, this is not simply a question of due process of law and the Constitution of the United States being obeyed in regard to this man's situation, Dr. Sami Al-Arian, but the implications of this case for you and for me are and should be incredibly obvious, it seems to me, that when you deny the fundamental constitutional rights of people in this country, what may be somebody else's loss of liberty today might be yours or mine tomorrow. And so this case is not simply important on its own merits, but it involves the larger implications, it seems to me, of the USA Patriot Act and the way in which that act, in conjunction with politically motivated prosecutors, can result in something that Franz Kafka would have had a field day writing about. We're now dealing with something like that, and it's not in this case, going on in the former Soviet Union. It is not in this case going on in Nazi Germany. We're talking about the fact that in 21st century America that something like this is happening, and the implications, again, continue to unfold in the days ahead. He has been on a hunger strike, by the way, that has gone on for quite a number of days now. I'm going to say at least 60 days, maybe a little longer, and his health is, of course, being jeopardized by this entire tragedy. And when you look through this eight- or nine-page piece that has been put together on this by the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, it becomes very, very clear that you and I have a direct stake in this in regard to what is happening in our nation. The Constitution of the United States and habeas corpus are very much at stake in this entire situation, not simply for this man, but again for you and for me. If this is allowed to stand, it seems to me that we're talking about a precedent where there is an unrestrained power of government to do whatever it will, regardless of the Constitution and regardless of laws of the land that are consonant with the Constitution, that are not in opposition to it. And when you look at habeas corpus, you're talking about something that goes back to Magna Carta, of course, in the year 1215. This is at the center of everything that we believe as Americans, to believe in a constitution, to believe in the rule of law, to believe that a person is presumed to be innocent until proven otherwise, beyond a shadow of a doubt, and that if a person is not convicted in a court of law, that in terms of habeas corpus, there is no right on the part of government to continue to hold that person in detention. And when we see those types of things being violated, as they clearly have been in this case, again, we are talking about something where what is going on today in regard to the denial of due process for one person might well be you or me or someone that we know and love tomorrow. Keep an eye on this, folks. It is a case that has undeniable draconian dimensions, particularly as we seem to be moving closer and closer to an armed conflict with Iran. I don't pretend to know the full truth about what happened several days ago with these British Marines and now with their detention in Iranian administrative custody. It will take who knows how many days and weeks to try and sort out what did happen. We may never know the truth, but suffice it to say, in that game of ping pong that goes back and forth, it appears that we're getting closer to a war. And if we end up in war with Iran, will the restriction on domestic liberties become even more draconian? This is Mark Dankos America coming to you live from San Antonio on RBN. We'll be back.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Sit back, relax, and enjoy a vacation to the beautiful Ozark Mountains. Howard Creek Resort is nestled conveniently between the cities of Bull Shoals and Mountain Home on Bull Shoals Lake in the natural state of Arkansas. Howard Creek Resort offers easy access to excellent fishing and water recreation of all types. The excitement of nearby Branson music shows and Silver Dollar City is accented perfectly by the many attractions located here in the heart of the Ozarks. Horseback riding, water skiing, scuba diving, hiking, caves, and rock climbing are just a few of the many activities that are available to do in our area. Howard Creek Resorts offers it all. Whether you're staying for the weekend or for a month, Howard Creek Resorts is the place to be, an excellent place to stay, and a valued traditional family vacation resort. Visit our website at www.howardcreek.com or call 1-877-253-7690. Come visit us for a lifetime of memories.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
America coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Commander Dave Lewis, who is the research officer for the USS Liberty, will be on the show at right around or just after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. We're going to spend a couple of hours talking about Dave's own experiences and what it has meant for him in the last 40 years to have been dealing with the aftermath of this Liberty case. And he has, I'm sure, a lot of data to share with us to augment what was being discussed by Gary Brummett on Friday in regard to the same issue. We will keep focusing on this USS Liberty situation in the days ahead because it seems to me that we're not simply looking at a great tragedy that impacted the lives of very fine Americans dedicated to their country who were caught up in this whole mess 40 years ago, but the implications of what the U.S. government did and did not do at that time, what they knew and did not know at that time, why things were handled the way that they were, and why Israel has been held unaccountable for four decades in regard to having promoted a direct premeditated attack upon an American vessel, is something that continues to resonate in the halls of the homes of many Americans who are just now beginning to find out about the USS Liberty and what happened 40 years ago. And again, as we get ready to enter into what appears to be a new phase of the current Middle Eastern conflict, this USS Liberty case is an important thing to keep in mind because, in my view, it's a microcosm which provides an example for us in regard to the way in which Israel operates, the way that they operate in international affairs, the way that they operate in terms of civilized discourse, the way that they operate in terms of real and false flag incidents. And quite clearly, when we watch what has unfolded since March of 2003, one can make the case that Israel has been the driving force behind the United States' decision to invade Iraq in March of 2003, and in regard to all of the things that have happened both before and since when it comes to American military and foreign policy in the region, which leads me to something that I need to remind you of, and that is that Wednesday on this show, Dr. Stephen Snigoski will join us. He is associated with a very, very fine online publication entitled The Last Ditch. The Last Ditch. Libertarian and paleoconservative writers are all chronicled there at The Last Ditch. They have their own correspondence, but then they link up with other people around the country who have something to say, both in terms of long-term archives as well as stories that have just come out. The Last Ditch has a somewhat complicated URL, so I would recommend to you that the best way of finding it is simply to go to my website, markdankoff.com, go to the links page at markdankoff.com, and as you look at the links page, you will see a very prominent logo for The Last Ditch. All of those logos are hyperlinked. Simply click on The Last Ditch, and it will take you directly to some of the work of Dr. Stephen Snigoski, as well as other things that are put together there by editor Nicholas Strachan of The Last Ditch. And it is a fun read to go through that. These guys are insightful. They're great academicians. They're appropriately sarcastic, and they are fair. They will post things occasionally that don't necessarily completely fit their own ideological perspective that they nonetheless think are of value to their readers. So it's a real repository of a lot of interesting things. And Dr. Stephen Snigoski will be on this show on Wednesday to discuss Israel, to discuss neoconservatism, to discuss Dr. Snigoski's most recent post, where he argues most forcefully that it is Israel, not the oil lobby, that has been the predominant prevailing force in driving American foreign policy in the Middle East, and especially when it comes to this current conflict with Iraq. And that article that he has written, which I believe has a title of Israel, Not Oil, is posted at Breaking All the Rules News, which in turn links back to Dr. Snigoski's original post for The Last Ditch. But he has a Ph.D. from the University of Maryland and is an acknowledged expert in the area of Middle Eastern studies. And he's going to be on the show on Wednesday for 3 hours to talk about a lot of things. And if you're not familiar with Dr. Stephen Snigoski, find him at The Last Ditch, which you can get to by going to my links page at markdankoff.com and just clicking on The Last Ditch. You can also, I'm sure, find Dr. Stephen Snigoski by doing a Google search on his name. That's S-N-I-E-G-O-S-K-I, Snigoski. And I'm sure all kinds of interesting things will come up. This guy is a first-rate thinker. He's a first-rate writer. He's a first-rate academician. And he was on Dr. Hesham Tilawi's most recent Current Issues television show, by the way. Dr. Tilawi is a good friend of mine, has had me on his television show in recent times, going back to the month of February, to discuss Christian Zionism. Steve Snigoski was Hesham's most recent guest, talking about some of the same kinds of things that he's going to cover on this show for 3 hours on Wednesday. And Dr. Snigoski sent me the URL for that last appearance that he made with Dr. Hesham Tilawi at currentissues.tv, I will probably in the next 24 hours or so get that URL posted at Breaking All the Rules News, so a much wider audience will be exposed to both Dr. Snigoski as well as to Dr. Hesham Talawi's Current Issues television show. And when I do that, it'll be a very user-friendly thing, where if you're browsing BATR News, you will be able to find that appearance on the part of Dr. Stephen Snigoski. He was on Dr. Hesham Talawi's show, as I understand it, for 2 hours, and I'm sure it was quite an appearance. And again, he will be covering, I'm sure, many of those same topics with us Wednesday morning for 3 hours. And among the many things that he wishes to discuss is the case of a guy named John Sharp. I first became aware of John Sharp, who he is, when Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross gave me just a 30-second briefing about John Sharp, who is someone who was in the Navy, who ended up leaving the employ of the United States Navy when some of his commentary, his written commentary, political commentary, was getting to be a bit much for the Navy in regard to Mr. Sharp's discussion of Israel. John Sharp, I suspect, is a most interesting gentleman. We will learn more about him through Dr. Stephen Snigoski on Wednesday morning, and then I hope subsequently to have John Sharp on this show when I can get a hold of his contact information to give us an even further glimpse at his whole history and the whole way in which those who are speaking out on the subject of Zionism and its impact upon American foreign and domestic policy have been up to this point ostracized and worse in regard to their present and past positions in our society. A lot of tragic stories there that for quite obvious reasons are routinely never covered in the establishment press. But in this situation, the story of John Sharp is one of the things that Steve Snigoski will be talking about on Wednesday. And then I hope subsequently to get Mr. Sharp on this show in his own right to share with us the particulars of his own life situation. That then leads us to something that we made reference to on Friday when we were talking with Gary Brummett about the USS Liberty, and that is a post by the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs entitled "The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years." This is a June 1993 piece by James M. Ennis Jr., who was a lieutenant on the deck of the USS Liberty the day of the attack. James Ennis retired from the Navy in 1978. He was a lieutenant commander with 27 years of both enlisted and commissioned service. And as I just mentioned, he was a lieutenant on the bridge of the USS Liberty on the day of the attack. His book on the subject is entitled "Assault on the Liberty." That's Random House, 1980. It's a so-called notable naval book selection of the U.S. Naval Institute and was the editor's choice when reviewed in the Washington Post. If you can find this page, which is James Ennis, E-N-N-E-S, James Ennis Jr., that's June of 1993, the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, which is the same publication whose print edition I just purchased a day or two ago in regard to the Al Arian story. They have a marvelous on-site compendium of articles related to back issues. This tragedy of the USS Liberty and James Ennis's piece on that whole situation is one of the articles in the archives. If you go to that article, you will find that there is at the bottom of the page a clickable URL that will enable you to get a copy of James Ennis's book directly from the American Educational Trust, which is the publisher of the Washington Report on Middle East Affairs. But long the short of it is, I wanted to read a little bit of this article of Dr. Ennis's online, maybe as a preparation for Commander Dave Lewis's appearance at just after 8 o'clock this morning on this show, Central Standard Time. James Ennis, then, in this June 1993 piece for the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs entitled "The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years," goes on to say that 26 years, keeping in mind he's speaking in June of 93, 26 years have passed since that clear day on June the 8th, 1967, when Israel attacked the USS Liberty with aircraft and torpedo boats, killing 34 young men and wounding 171. The attack in international waters followed over 9 hours of close surveillance. Israeli pilots circled the ship at low level 13 times on 8 different occasions before attacking. Radio operators in Spain, Lebanon, Germany, and aboard the ship itself all heard the pilots reporting to their headquarters that this was an American ship. They attacked anyway. And when the ship failed to sink, the Israeli government concocted an elaborate story to cover the crime. There is no question that this attack on a U.S. Navy ship was deliberate. This was a coordinated effort involving air, sea, headquarters, and commando forces attacking over a long period. It was not the quote-unquote few rounds of misdirected fire that Israel would have the world believe. Worse, the Israeli excuse is a gross and detailed fabrication that disagrees entirely with the eyewitness recollections of survivors. Key American leaders called the attack deliberate. More important, eyewitness participants from the Israeli side had told survivors that they knew they were attacking an American ship. 15 years after the attack, an Israeli pilot approached Liberty survivors and then held extensive interviews with former Congressman Pete McCloskey about his role. According to the senior Israeli lead pilot, he recognized the Liberty as American immediately, so informed his headquarters, and was told to ignore the American flag and continue his attack. He refused to do so and returned to base, where he was arrested. Later, a dual citizen Israeli major told survivors that he was in an Israeli war room where he heard that pilot's radio report. The attacking pilots and everyone in the Israeli war room knew that they were attacking an American ship, the major said. He recanted the statement only after he received threatening phone calls from Israel. The pilots' protests also were heard by radio monitors in the U.S. Embassy in Lebanon. Then U.S. Ambassador to Lebanon, Dwight Porter, has confirmed this. Porter told his story to syndicated columnists Roland Evans and Robert Novak and offered to submit to further questioning by authorities. Unfortunately, no one in the U.S. government has any interest in hearing these first-person accounts of Israeli treachery. Key members of the Lyndon Johnson administration have long agreed that this attack was no accident. Perhaps most outspoken is former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Thomas Moore. Quote, "I can never accept the claim that this was a mistaken attack," unquote, he insists. Former Secretary of State Dean Rusk is equally outspoken, calling the attack deliberate in press and radio interviews. Similarly strong language comes from top leaders of the Central Intelligence Agency, National Security Agency, some of whose personnel were among the victims, the National Security Council, and from presidential advisors such as Clark Clifford, Joseph Califano, and Lucius Battle. A top-secret analysis of Israel's excuse conducted by the Department of State found Israel's story to be untrue. Yet Israel and its defenders continue to stand by their claim that the attack was a tragic accident, quote-unquote, in which Israel mistook the most modern electronic surveillance vessel in the world for a rusted-out 40-year-old Egyptian horse transport. Despite the evidence, no U.S. administration has ever found the courage to ever defy the Israeli lobby by publicly demanding a proper accounting from Israel. Most members of Congress respond to inquiries about the Liberty with seemingly sympathetic promises to investigate, quote-unquote. Weeks or months later, they write again to report their findings, quote-unquote. Quote, "The Navy investigated in 1967 and found no evidence that the attack was deliberate," unquote, they say. Israel apologized, calling the attack a tragic case of misidentification and paid damages for loss of life, injuries, and property damage. The matter is closed. The fact is, however, that the Navy's quote-unquote investigation examined only the quality of the crew's training, the adequacy of communications, and the performance of the crew under fire. The Navy was forbidden, I will repeat that, the Navy was forbidden to examine Israeli culpability, and Navy investigators refused to allow testimony showing that the attack was deliberate or that Israel's excuse was untrue. James Ennis continues, "Instead of determining whether the attack was deliberate, the Navy blocked all testimony about Israeli actions. No survivor was permitted to describe the close-in machine gun fire that continued for 40 minutes after Israel claimed that all firing had stopped. No survivor was allowed to talk about the life rafts that Israeli torpedo men machine gunned in the water. No survivor was permitted to challenge defects and fabrications in Israel's story. Even my eyewitness testimony as officer of the deck was withheld from the official record. No evidence of Israeli culpability was found, quote-unquote, because no such testimony was allowed. To survivors, this was not an investigation. It was a cover-up. Occasionally, a member of Congress will seem to probe a bit deeper, as Ted Kennedy once did. In response to requests, Kennedy asked Liberty survivors and others for input, which his staff then studied, quote-unquote, for more than a year. Kennedy asked no questions, conducted no interviews, and showed no curiosity about the many discrepancies in Israel's story. Then Kennedy reported his findings, quote-unquote, in a letter to survivors. Carefully avoiding the circumstances of the attack, Kennedy's letter deplored the, quote, tragic circumstances and loss of life, unquote, and declared that the facts about the Liberty must be uncovered, quote, to the maximum extent humanly possible, unquote. That letter, however, represented Kennedy's maximum effort. Appeals to Ted Kennedy for some real help go unanswered. The best form in the 90s for this story and related stories of the Middle East may well be electronic mail, the complex of computer and electronic mail systems that now span the globe. For instance, the USS Liberty and the Middle East are hot topics in the Prodigy Interactive Computer Service run by Sears and IBM. With over 2 million members, Prodigy's Israel forums guarantee some lively and often bitter debates. Unfortunately, the playing field often seems uneven. The cover-up side heavily outnumbers its critics and has allowed tactics rarely tolerated from others. Criticism of Israeli policies is seen as, quote, attacks on the Jewish homeland, unquote. Pro-Israel debaters charge that Israel's critics are disciples of hate, quote, unquote, and, quote, pathological haters of Israel and all things Jewish, unquote. The language gets worse. Prodigy allows Israel's critics to be called sodomists and derriere-bussing anti-Semites. The Washington Report on Middle East Affairs, which prints an update on progress toward a congressional investigation every year on the June anniversary of the tragedy, comes in for special vitriol. The magazine is described almost daily as a hate rag, and yet Prodigy's censors often reject even mild and factual rebuttals of such charges as insulting, quote-unquote. Despite a near-immediate blackout and such invective directed at publications that defy it, Americans do continue to support the USS Liberty and its Survivors Association. Late last year, the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 560 in Zimmerman, Minnesota, raised over $12,000 to create a rest stop and picnic area on donated land near a major highway as a memorial to the men who died on the Liberty. This makes the 29th public memorial to the USS Liberty. The memorial area in an inscribed granite stone were appropriately dedicated in a ceremony attended by survivors, VFW members, Mayor Randy Hansen, and Liberty's heroic Congressional Medal of Honor winning skipper, Captain William McGonigal, among others. Inspired by community support, members of Post 560 are now telling the USS Liberty story to every VFW post in Minnesota. Member Stan Woolley tells us that after they cover all of Minnesota, they will start on Wisconsin and the Dakotas. In New York, meanwhile, Korean War veteran John Everts learned about the attack just last year and was similarly moved. Everts inspired two Korean vets groups in which he is active, called the Chosen Few and the Korean War Veterans Kivlehan Chapter, to write more than 100 letters to Congress seeking the investigation that survivors feel are being denied. To date, no member of Congress has risked re-election chances by agreeing publicly to Everts' request. No one really expected that to happen, but efforts like these help members of Congress and the American public remember that Israel attacked the USS Liberty, did so deliberately, and then lied about it. Sooner or later, Americans will insist that their government and their representatives in Congress find out why. That's James Ennis, who was the officer on the deck of the USS Liberty on June the 8th, 1967. That is from his piece for the Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs, entitled The Assault on the USS Liberty, Still Covered Up After 26 Years. We can now fast forward another 14 years to 1997 and say that this assault is being covered up 40 years now after the fact, and we need to find out exactly why. And again, if you get to that piece of James Ennis Jr. entitled The Assault on the USS Liberty Still Covered Up After 26 Years, that is a Washington Report on Middle Eastern Affairs post from June of 1993. Get to the bottom of the page, and you will see information there on how to order his book from the American Educational Trust. That book is entitled Assault on the Liberty. It is a Random House publication from 1980, and again, will be well worth your time and mine, I'm sure, in reading all of what is known, at least known at that time by Mr. Ennis, in regard to the events of June 8th, 1967, and all of what happened thereafter in regard to the cover-up of this on the part of the U.S. government, and how it could possibly be that the government of Israel would have such power in the American government and in the American news media that they could keep something like this quiet and could continue to offer a story about what happened that quite clearly is a complete pack of lies. I'm at 8 o'clock this morning, a little bit after 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time. We will be joined by Commander Pete Lewis, who now hails from Vermont. And Pete was the individual who, or Dave Lewis, I'm sorry, Dave Lewis was the executive or the research officer for the USS Liberty. He, I'm sure, will add to the many details that Gary Brummett gave us on Friday in regard to a conversation about what happened then and why these men continue to work on this case 40 years later to try and get to the bottom of the truth. Now, I've been thinking a lot about these guys as I have learned more about this situation, both from Wormia and from Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross and now from Gary Brummett. I can't imagine what it would be like to carry that type of a burden for four decades and counting. And, you know, keeping in mind that there were 34 lives lost, there were 171 wounded, and we look at the total number of people on the ship, which, as I recall it from Brummett's statistics, is well under 300, you're talking about a catastrophic event in the lives not simply of those who were wounded or who lost their lives, but to think about those who survived but have not only the physical but the emotional scars to bear from this over a 40-year period of time. These guys, it seems to me, are trying to carry the torch not only for their fallen comrades but to demand of their own government some accountability in regard to a full-fledged investigation of what took place and to demand that there be some very serious redress here demanded of the government of Israel. This, again, is a circumstance that boggles the mind when you get into it, especially the fact that the United States Navy, as is chronicled here by James Ennis in his June 1993 piece, absolutely, deliberately excluded all testimony from these survivors in regard to the Israeli role in this situation. Again, all of the evidence is there from radio traffic, from chronology, from eyewitness accounts, and from things that we now know were going on with both Lyndon Johnson and Robert McNamara to underscore that this is a crime, folks. This is an absolute crime that took place on June 8, 1967. The initial crime was committed by Israel. The crimes that followed involved the cover-up of what took place and were Israel's assets, both in the U.S. Congress as well as in the executive branch of the government, as well as within the military, in this case the U.S. Navy, and the American media, all conspired to ensure that people like you and I would never learn the truth. Folks, it's time that we take these people on. You know, we still live in a remnant group of people who believe in the First Amendment of this country and who believe that through alternative media and through legitimate, peaceful political activism and through exercising some discerning courage in regard to standing up on some of these things, that there may, in fact, yet be hope for this country. You know, when Mark Glenn was on the other day, he was talking about this in terms of his own work at Crescent and Cross, as well as the American Free Press. And Mark said that in terms of the influence of the Jewish lobby in this country, that it has had such a cancerous effect to see the success of that lobby over a period of many decades in the American body politic, that we have now reached a point, whether you're looking at political intrigue, the success of the Jewish lobby in both influencing American foreign and domestic policy, or what they've done to the culture, that it was seen that the rest of us are riding on an airplane that is out of control, that is nosediving toward a very hard surface and a crash landing, and where there seems to be little or no way to pull up out of the nosedive. Mark was the one who used that analogy in colorful description when he was on this show the other day last week. And he was suggesting that we don't have much time to pull out of the dive. I think he's right, but let's give it a good try. This is Mark Dankos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Commander Dave Lewis of Vermont, who is the research officer for the USS Liberty, will join us shortly after 8 o'clock this morning. Stay tuned.
Catholic priest calls for Christians to resist unjust war. It is an established historical fact that the Vatican has publicly stated that the Iraqi war is an unjust war. However, it miserably failed to tell its Catholic soldiers that it is a mortal sin to attack Iraq. The Protestant ministers in unison should take the logical step of telling their soldiers that it is a serious offense against God to participate in this unjust war. However, if enough Protestant ministers do not take this logical step, then the lay Catholics and Protestants have a serious obligation to demand of their clergy to take this logical step publicly. Personally, I am doing all that I can to stop the continuation of the murder, carnage, and suffering that is being committed against the innocent people of Iraq in this terrible, unjust war. For additional facts regarding this grave matter, order the lecture by Father John Martinez entitled WW3 Can Still Be Prevented. Just go to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click on our web banner for more information and ordering.
Americans who already realize our nation is in deep trouble need special edition hard copy literature to awaken the widest possible spectrum of people to the imminence of our nation's peril. The Artificially Sweetened Times informs people that the artificial sweetener aspartame is a hidden addiction killing people worldwide with a cluster of symptoms we now call Rumsfeld's disease. Find out who is responsible for unleashing this weapon of mass misery on the world and become part of the global movement to eliminate this neurotoxic drug from our food supply. The People's Income Tax Guide cites congressional records, Supreme Court decisions, and newspaper articles at the time to prove conclusively that wages were never intended to be taxed as income. A lot has happened in the world since 9/11. The report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 disproves the government's explanation of September 11 through a careful analysis of the evidence. The Artificially Sweetened Times, the People's Income Tax Report, and the report of the Citizens Commission on 9/11 are priced for mass distribution. Sample copies are just $3. Call 208-255-2307 or go to idaho-observer.com.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
We're back. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Our special guest this morning is shortly after 8 o'clock Central Standard Time will be Commander Dave Lewis. Dave was a research officer on the USS Liberty on the date of the attack, June the 8th, 1967. He will add, I'm sure, to the many fine and incredible pieces of information that Gary Brummett bequeathed to us on Friday in regard to what transpired that day. And again, as I have mentioned before, I want to keep focused on this USS Liberty story ongoingly in the weeks and months ahead. Mark Glenn of Crescent and Cross and the American Free Press was talking to me about this after Friday's show on the telephone. Mark said he thought it was a good show, and he indicates that he feels we ought to continue looking at this because this whole USS Liberty thing, it seems, is such a microcosm of what the larger issues are related to the control of American foreign policy on the part of the Zionist state of Israel. And when we go back and look at what happened on June the 8th, 1967, it's not simply correct to set the record straight in regard to what happened then. It's important to see that what happened then has a direct bearing on the same characters who continue to run the show now in regard to American policy and in regard to false flag incidents and other things that have Israel constantly lurking in the background, but constantly being skillful at manipulating things to avoid direct public responsibility and accountability for things that subsequently result in bad things happening for the United States. Is this present conflict in the Middle East truly in our national interest? What about the $500 billion that we have already spent on this conflict and counting? What about the loss of life that has occurred on all sides? What about the false pretenses under which we went to war? Virtually no one today is talking about the absolutely ludicrous case that the Bush made for the weapons of mass destruction of Saddam Hussein through their surrogate, Colin Powell, who appeared before the UN Security Council in February of 2003. When you go back and you start stacking up all of the evidence on this, somebody was sold a bill of goods. That somebody is you and me. And that bill of goods sale continues. We are not out of Iraq. The death toll continues to mount. The amount of money that is being borrowed and spent on this whole thing continues to escalate. And now we're seeing ongoingly that there are events taking place in the Shatt al-Arab waterway and the Persian Gulf. There are events taking place in Azerbaijan and Khuzestan province and Balochistan province in Iran that suggest that a much wider conflict is coming. And when we watch this whole thing unfolding, we have to ask ourselves why. How did we get this far afield of George Washington's farewell address foreign policy? How did we reach a point where we could commit thousands of lives and billions of dollars to this effort and could be risking a world conflagration over something that seems absolutely ludicrous now and totally disprovable in regard to the alleged weapons of mass destruction allegedly possessed by Saddam Hussein that we now know for sure he did not have? What was Saddam's link to 9/11? Absolutely none. Saddam Hussein was not an ally of al-Qaeda. He was an enemy of al-Qaeda. And Saddam Hussein had been an American intelligence asset in the region from 1958 to approximately 1990 or early 1991. Why then were we subsequently going to war with that country? We'll be back. This is Mark Dancos, America, coming to you live from San Antonio, Texas, on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We hope to be hooked up with Commander Dave Lewis.